This is the Digital Story Podcast number 793, June 1st, 2021. Today's theme is Get Serious, the Fujifilm GFX100S Medium Format Mirrorless. I'm Derek Story. When you first pick up the GFX100S, you know you're playing in a different league. Its heft combined with confidence-inspiring specification builds anticipation that something wonderful is about to happen. And the pictures do not disappoint. The question is this camera for you? We'll explore that topic on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. The GFX100S at $5,999 is a 102 megapixel mirrorless camera featuring a 43.8 by 32.9 BSI CMOS sensor. It is a big one. It really is. It produces files that measure 11,648 by 8,736 pixels. Yet it feels like a pro-caliber DSLR in the hands. So I've been shooting with this hefty but amazing camera using both an 80mm f1.7 lens, and that sells for $2,299, that provides an effective focal length of 63mm, and the relatively compact Fujifilm GF 50mm f3.5 sells for $999 with a 40mm effective focal length. Now, this is the medium format version of a pancake lens, but it is not your normal pancake lens. It is really quite a nice hunk of machinery here. I really like it. In fact, I have it on the camera right now. So I have both of these lenses because I wanted that fast 80mm lens, which is, I would consider, a super professional lens. I used it on a corporate shoot, on a client shoot for environmental portraits, and it performed fantastic. And before I get into all the specifications and everything of the camera, which we'll talk about for a few minutes, I do want to mention that I experimented with the skin smoothing setting on this camera, on the GFX, using that 80mm lens. And I shot RAW plus JPEG, and it affected the JPEGs. It has two skin smoothing settings. Now, the reason why I bring this up, I was a little surprised to see that in this camera because, you know, initially I went into this camera thinking, boy, you know, this is a serious camera for commercial photography, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yet, as I started to use it, it had that sort of fun feeling like I get from my X100V. It really had that same sort of vibe. And the skin smoothing, I think, really drove that concept home that, yes, this has a big sensor. Yes, the specifications are crazy, all that kind of stuff. But at its heart, it's still quite playful. And by the way, I used the skin smoothing on both the what they call the heavy and light setting. Neither one is over the top. And it was quite good. It was quite good. And I read some other reviews, and they mentioned it. And they said, well, you know, I really liked it, but I probably wouldn't use it on a real shoot. And I'm thinking, I'm not so sure about that. I might be tempted to use it and just not tell anyone. But I think, like I said, that really said to me, okay, this is a camera that you can have fun with. You can have fun with this camera, but it's also quite serious. And we should look at some of the serious spec, and then I'll get back more to the user experience. So as I mentioned, 102 megapixels. That's a lot of megapixels. And a nice size sensor, 43.8 by 32.9. Now, the 80mm lens on here gives you a 63mm equivalent focal length. So if you're a medium format shooter, if you've ever shot medium format in the past, then you know that sensor is a little bit smaller than like when I used to shoot with a Hasselblad, the 80 millimeter was more like a 50 millimeter lens. So the sensor, when I look at it, feels more like a, 6.45 sensor, rather than what we would think of as a full size medium format sensor. But to tell you the truth, you don't really need anything bigger in there. First of all, because the lenses are already hefty enough as it is. And second of all, with the resolution and everything that you get out of the sensor, it's just fabulous the way that it is. So the 80 millimeter on here equals 63 millimeters in 35 millimeter terms. And the 50 millimeter equals 40 millimeters in 35 millimeter terms. Nice big sensor. And I believe the sensor was developed by Sony and it is excellent. Now they combine that sensor with an X Processor 4. And so it's got lots of horsepower, plenty of image processing prowess, no problems there. And along those lines, I just want to mention that you get 16-bit RAW files out of that. That's a lot of color that you're getting. Not 12-bit or 14-bit, but you get 16-bit RAW files out of this. So I think landscape photographers in particular would really like this camera because all things considered, it's quite portable, and you get that 16-bit color out of there, and of course, you have plenty of resolution. Seems like a landscape photographer's dream to me. You can also shoot video with it. You can get 4K at 30 frames per second. Has quite a few video features. Actually, I was a bit surprised by that, because I wouldn't really think to shoot video with this camera. I think a smaller, more nimble camera in my mind, but if you want to shoot 4K with this, you can, and it looks very good. And it has a nice electronic viewfinder and a very nice tilting LCD to make rather stills or movie. And by the way, it has a switch that's above the mode dial, and I love it. It's movie on one position and still on the other position. Just no messing around with this, just a nice switch right there so you can easily go back and forth between the two. And the viewfinders make both types of photography a joy. The electronic viewfinder is just 3.69 million dots of joy right there. It's fun to look through. You have, of course, you can adjust it for your eyesight. It has diopter adjustments, all that good stuff. The LCD is quite clever. So the back LCD. So it's 3.2 inches. So it's nice, good size. 2.36 million dots. And in the specs, they say tilting, but what they don't tell you is that it tilts two ways. So it tilts that nice up and down way that so many of us like, so terrific for street photography and, low angle photography, all that. It's just really great. But it has this little switch on the side and that unlocks a hinge and allows you to swing it sideways as well. So you get both. And by the way, when it swings sideways, it swings to the right. So the LCD does not cover the mic and headphone ports like I run into on the smaller mirrorless cameras. They are completely free. It swings the other way, and the LCD does not get in the way of those ports, which honestly is quite a joy. Also on that side, and we're talking about the left side now, has USB-C. So you can both charge and then have it connected via cable to a computer at the same time. And so, that's really, really terrific as well. The port placement and the way the LCD works makes it very practical, very easy. You don't have any of those little gotchas that you go, oh, darn, I love swinging out the LCD, but now I can't use a mic. That kind of stuff. None of that happens here. 5-axis sensor shift image stabilization, getting basically 6 stops of IS, depending on the lens that you're using, on a sensor that size for sensor-based stabilization. Okay, there's some good engineering that's going on there. 425-point phase detection autofocus. Autofocus is not a problem with this camera. Now, I don't know if I would be shooting sports with this, but I don't know if I'd be shooting sports with this anyway, to tell you the truth. But, you know, just in my casual use during the photo shoots that I did do with it, that where I had some pressure, you know, because there was clients and so forth, and then just me banging around with that 50 millimeter on there, the autofocus was swift and accurate. You do have to keep an eye on that sensor every now and then. I noticed, and I run into this sometimes, and I think it's more me than the camera, but I'd look at the LCD and the autofocus point would be like down in the lower left corner or something. I go, what's it doing down there? You know, so then you just, you know, hit the button and you recenter it. Was swift and accurate. Very nice autofocusing. Again, for, you know, big lenses and all the stuff that's going on here, impressive. Your ISO 100 to 12,800, it's very workable, very nice. I shot a lot at 3,200 with it. I think in part because I love having the 50 millimeter on there, and it has a maximum aperture of f3.5. The 80 millimeter, which is a much bigger lens, is f1.7 max. And so I didn't need to jack the ISO quite as much for that, because I could shoot wide open or f2 or so. But on this one at f3.5 or f4, I was using ISO 3200 a lot, and the images were great. I mean, if you were to show them to me, I could not guess what the ISO was on it. I'd just say, I don't know, 800, something like that. Just in case you don't have enough resolution at 102 megapixels, it does have the 400 megapixel pixel shift multi-shot. So we're familiar with this on both Olympus and Pentax as well, where the sensor moves a little bit. And you can't use it for moving subjects. It's still photography only. But if you really want a lot of megapixels, it works very well on still subjects. And then you get 19 film simulation modes. Again, this is that kind of fun that I talk about. It has that fun. It has all the film simulation modes that you would want or expect from Fujifilm. And you get two SD card slots, and they're both UHS-II. So yay, there's plenty of room for them. They're on the right side, and it's got a cool little lock to open the door. It reminds me of one of my older Pentaxes where it actually locks, you know, so it doesn't automatically flip open. Two card slots right there, and they're both UHS-II. You know, that's just an overview of the specs, but you can see that it's a really well-specified camera. But I want to go back to the shooting experience, because I expected the specs. What surprised me was how fun it was to shoot with. As you know, I have the X100V, the Fujifilm X100V. And because I shoot with that camera, the menu system and the control placement and the way this camera worked, the 100S, was very similar. So I felt like I already knew how to work it. It has, you know, the Q button in the same spot, so you can, you know, do the overview of all your different settings. The menu system is organized the same way. The button and dial placement is pretty much the same. The drive mode, the whole deal, you know, the whole deal, the way that it works. So if you're already shooting with a Fujifilm, a modern Fujifilm, this camera is not going to be a problem to learn. You probably won't even have to crack the owner's manual to tell you the truth. It's like its bigger brother is what it is. It's like, okay, here's the X100V. And then here's its bigger brother. It's like the Derek Story version of a Fujifilm camera. Now, there are some differences, of course. This camera tops out at 5 frames per second in burst mode. That's probably the biggest difference that you'll notice. And also, it sounds more like a DSLR when you take the picture. It's got that kind of ba-bump kind of thing going on there. It feels a little bit slower. I don't think it really is, maybe just because you just hear the mechanics going on or something. But I did notice during the portrait shoot, kind of wanted a little bit more than 5 frames per second a couple times. Most of the time it was just fine, but that, you know, that's something to note. Now, again, if you're a landscape shooter or if you're doing product photography, which are two disciplines that are perfect for this camera, that's not going to make a difference. And going back to, I don't think this is a camera that you'd use for sports for all sorts of reasons. This is just another one. I was delighted on the way the camera interacted with the Fujifilm Cam Remote app on my iPhone. This is something that I have really fallen in love with the X100V, especially the real-time geotagging that you get, because they use the low-power Bluetooth. So you can, the phone's just sort of talking to the camera all the time. It's not draining either battery because it's low power, yet you're getting that real-time geotagging. It worked exactly the same with this camera, exactly the same. And I'm just going around again with that 50 millimeter lens on there doing, you know, medium format version of nimble photography and geotagging all the way. Really cool. And all the other functions on the Cam Remote app work the same. I really enjoyed that. I want to note something while we're still talking about shooting experience, that both of these lenses have the click f-stops, and Fujifilm gives you, you know, 3 clicks per f-stop. So you can really, you know, get in there and do, you know, f16 and a third kind of thing. And so I'm looking at the 50 millimeter right now. I have it on here. So it goes from 3.5 all the way to 32 with all those nice click stops in between. And then you have A, so you have auto mode on this, which is, you know, really great when you want to shoot in program mode or shutter priority mode. And then it has the C mode that's after that, which is a custom mode that gives you some options via the menu on what you want to have happen. So both automatic and C mode on both of these lenses. What I'm driving to is that combined with the dual dials on the front grip and then on the back of the camera, and then all these custom modes that you have with the camera, you have a lot of flexibility. You can set it up just about any way you want in terms of your shooting experience. So pretty cool stuff there. The camera is comfortable to hold. It has a nice deep front grip and a very good thumb rest in the back. And if you have larger hands like I do, it's super comfortable, feels really good. And believe it or not, and this is something for a medium format camera, you can shoot with it one-handed. If you, I mean, you got image stabilization, just make sure the lens isn't too long. Crazy that way. With the LCD, I did a lot of focusing and composing on the LCD. Again, this is where it felt like a mirrorless camera because I didn't have to look through the viewfinder all the time. I'd tilt that LCD to get it the way that I wanted, hold it with one hand at a weird angle, and you know, press the shutter button halfway to lock in that focus and take the shot. It worked fabulously. Really does. Really does. So that tilting LCD combined with a deep grip and not too big of a camera, again, you have a lot of options with this camera in terms of how you work. Getting to image quality, as you may guess, the image quality is very, very good. I was working with it in Capture One Pro 21, both the RAW files and the JPEGs. The RAW files were very editable. In other words, I did some testing with white flowers in pretty bright light. And so when the images first loaded into Capture One Pro 21, everything was exposed nicely, the leaves and all that. And as you would expect, the white flowers did not have a lot of detail in them. The JPEGs and the RAWs look pretty much the same when they come into the application. So, you know, right away you're seeing, okay, not a lot of difference there. But of course, when I went to edit the RAW files, I was able to, you know, recover the detail in the white flowers and, you know, make all those changes that I would expect. So very editable RAW files, at least in Capture One Pro 21, which I tested it in. And then having all that resolution, you know, you can just crop to your heart's content and still come away with, you know, a very printable image. I mean, you could crop and crop and crop and then still make a 13 by 19 inch print. So, you know, just having that flexibility, I think, allows you to shoot a little bit wider and, you know, knowing that you have all this image to work with. And then if you do need wider, which happens sometimes when you're shooting for clients because they want to put type somewhere or something like that, then that's fine too. And it all really kind of comes nicely clean in the wash. I will say this, working in Capture One Pro on, I have a 2020 MacBook Pro. It doesn't have the M1 processor. It has the last Intel processor that they put in it before the M1. And it did take those RAW files a second to resolve. So that's the first time I've seen that in a long time. So you do have a much bigger file here. And the point that I want to make there is that if you have an older workflow, such as a 2016 Mac, and all that kind of stuff, and you start jamming these 100 megapixel RAW files in there, you will probably notice it, because even with my semi-current Mac without the M1, and I'm going to talk about the M1 and Capture One Pro in a story coming up, I noticed that it was not as fast. Like I said, just took that second for that RAW file to resolve. Haven't seen that in a long time. That just gives you some idea of what we're working with here in terms of data. So let's get to, is this camera for you or for me? And this is a great question, because I'll be honest with you, I've had this camera now for a bit, and it's not the camera that I reach for when I go for a walk, even with the quote-unquote medium format pancake lens on there. And I did some comparison shots with it with my Nikon full frame. And when you look at the two cameras, especially when you have the 50 millimeter on the Fujifilm, which isn't this, their most compact lens, they don't look that much different, in all honesty. But where I really notice the difference is in the weight. This camera has heft, and it weighs a lot more, for example, than my Nikon D610, which is a much, much lighter camera. So even though the size isn't that much different, it is different, but isn't that much different, the weight is noticeable. Now, on the plus side of this, that weight also tells you have a very well-built camera, which you do. This is a rugged camera that, will serve you for years and years and years to come, probably with no problems at all. But the weight is a difference. So I'm thinking, okay, if I was a serious landscape photographer, if I were still doing catalog or, high-end product photography, and then even portrait photography in the studio, I would probably take this camera very seriously, because I think it's very well suited for those situations for a couple reasons, because of its size, because of its image quality and all that. But also, the cheapest lens that I think you could get for this is this 50 millimeter on here for $999. That 80 millimeter, which I would absolutely want to have if I was doing professional work, that's another $2,400. And you start thinking about every time you add a lens to this system, I think there's 14 lenses they offer right now. Every time you add a lens to the system, not only does it cost a fair amount, but it's also sizable. Your kit really starts to grow. And so you start thinking about, again, how much do I want to carry with me? Then, unless you're just going to put the 50 on here and call it a day, which I doubt most people would do. They probably want the 50 for when they want to be a little bit more nimble. But, you're going to need some of the other lenses, because you're going to have a camera like this for serious work, and you're going to need serious lenses to go with that work. Then I would think for a lot of folks, they might hit the wall with the lens side of the equation, not so much the camera body itself. Again, the camera body feels very much like a mirrorless camera. It's very responsive. It's a lot of fun. Not that much bigger than a DSLR, even though it weighs a bit more. But then you start putting those big lenses on there, and you'll really notice the difference. And they're expensive. For landscape photographers and so forth, where you get away with a few lenses, two, maybe three lenses. If you're doing product photography, you're getting away with one, maybe two lenses, right? You don't need much more. Same thing with portrait photography, probably only two lenses in the studio. But then after that, I would have to say that I would rather have one of my other cameras when I'm out in the field. I'm telling you, though, I hope I still get to have this camera in my hands when the Oregon workshop comes, because I would love to have this camera on that workshop. Now, again, that's landscape photography, perfect for this camera. I don't know if I'll still have it then or not. We'll see if the camera gods smile on me. But if I get to take this camera to Oregon, it's going to be a blast. And then And then I should be able to come away with some really exceptional landscape shots. That's my overall take on this camera. I probably went into a bit more detail, but you know, if you're considering this thing, inquiring minds want to know. Fujifilm did a great job with this. This is a wonderful machine, and if you have the right need for it, it will serve you well. Capture One Pro announces native M1 support, promising significant performance improvements. This article is from DP Review, and I have a link to the full article on there if you want to go over there and check it out. So yes, now Capture One Pro runs on M1 Max. Let me read you a little bit about what they have to say. Add another high-end photo editing application to the list for Apple M1 Max. Capture One has announced that Capture One 21 is now ready for Apple Silicon. A new update available now allows the popular editor to run natively on the M1 chip. When Apple announced its silicon in the new M1 Max, which currently comprise the MacBook Pro, MacBook Air, Mac Mini, and iMac models, Apple remarked how simple it was for software to be ported from Intel to Apple Silicon. It was a far deal more complicated for some software, such as Capture One. Capture One says that given the power of Apple's M1 chip and the seismic shift the new technology represented, it was time to completely rethink its software. To get Capture One running natively on M1 Max and for it to take full advantage of the hardware, Capture One had to go further than ever before. It had to be re-architected from the ground up. Today's update is a fundamental redesign of the software and one that Capture One believes is well positioned for the future. As Capture One writes, the future looks fast. Capture One on M1 powered Max has many impressive performance improvements. The new advanced import is 50% quicker. Key tools such as crop and rotate are twice as fast. Making local edits with brushes and using styled brushes is smoother than ever. And this is available now. Now, I read another report, and they were doing some testing, bringing in some big RAW files from, you know, Sony full frames and all that, and testing the import function. And they were pretty much confirming what Capture One says. Maybe not 50% faster, but they were getting 30% plus faster testing Capture One Pro on an M1 compared to the previous version. So you're definitely going to get a speed bump with this new tandem. And if you're a Capture One Pro user right now and you just upgraded to an M1 Mac, all you have to do is download the update. It's free and you can just start blazing away. So did you shoot the lunar eclipse? You know, we talked about this on last week's show, and I know the timing could have been a little bit better because, you know, the show came out on Tuesday morning and the lunar eclipse was on Wednesday morning. So it didn't give you a lot of time to prepare if you weren't already thinking of doing it. I know some of you did go out because I saw comments on Facebook. So I went out, right, because I had to walk my talk there. I got a clear night. I can't tell you how many eclipses and meteor showers and solar events I've had clouds and just really had to work around them. But I got an absolutely clear night to work with, or a clear morning to work with. I was up at, here on the West Coast, I was up at 3:30 in the morning and out shooting. I had my spot scouted out and was out shooting by 3:45. And it just went well. It just went so very well. In fact, I put the photo on Flickr. It's also on TDS, so you can go over and see it. But I put the photo on Flickr, and it got picked up on Flickr Explore, and it's got thousands of views right now. So it did pretty well. It did pretty well. I want to talk a little bit about the shooting experience, though, because I used the 40-150 Pro lens, as you would guess that I would, which just performed great again. It always does. Such a go-to optic, I have to tell you. And I put it on the OMD EM5 Mark II. I have a double battery holder on that one. So I put two batteries in it, loaded it up, and used that camera. it worked well. But the thing that I really want to talk about is that I used the OI Share app to compose and then to actually shoot and to even change the aperture and so forth, because I was shooting in full manual mode, as I talked about in the podcast. And I just want to emphasize, I want to drive this point home, that originally I wasn't going to use the app. And then, you know, I was composing on the LCD and doing all that. And I just didn't get off to a good start. You know, I was just like, God, I just feel like I'm not clicking here. I'm having a hard time lining up the shot and getting it focused and, you know, all that kind of stuff using the LCD. The moment that I switched to the app using my iPhone, and I was just using an iPhone 10 to control it. The moment I switched to that app, everything just went bang. It was so much easier to focus. You know, you just tap on the screen, focus right on, you know, the edge there of the moon. That went well. You know, obviously triggering the shutter went well, making the changes. The whole experience became fun because the camera was just sitting there. Now, I'd have to reposition the camera every few minutes, right, because everything's moving. But the camera would just be sitting there, and then I'm working the whole shoot on my iPhone, and I got exactly what I wanted, and it worked great, and it was fun. So I just want to reiterate that point, that when you're doing shoots like this, if you have the ability with whatever camera you have to use your smartphone to control the camera and to compose and focus and all that stuff, do it, because it just makes it more enjoyable. And if you have a chance, go over and take a look at the shot. I think you'll like it. It turned out really well. All right, let's do a little virtual camera club news right now. I'm working on some new workshops for the second half of this year and into 2021, and I'll be announcing those soon. And I've been talking to our Inner Circle members about the timing of that, because, you know, originally when we were all sheltered in the pandemic, I could run the online workshops just about any time and people could make it work. But I wanted to check in now that people are going back to work and, you know, having to juggle their schedules a bit more than before. So when this new round of workshops come out, both the online and the physical, I'm taking into account that folks are getting busy again and their schedules are a little tighter. And hopefully I'll come up with a good formula so that we can continue to have as many of our virtual camera club members join me on these workshops. We're having a great time. We're in the middle of another infrared workshop right now. And then on the heels of that, we're going to start a black and white, ultimate black and white workshop. Probably going to offer those again later this year, and they'll be at you know, revised times, so that if you haven't been able to join us before, I'm hoping you will be able in the future. So stay tuned for all of that. Also want to mention my writing on medium.com. Just go over there, search for Derek Story. I have a number of articles in there right now. I think more than 25 at the moment. That is building nicely. We're getting a nice following there, and I'm really enjoying writing for them as well. It's all about photography, of course, all about photography. A big shout out to our Inner Circle members. They're the folks that support this podcast month in and month out, and they're very helpful when it comes to figuring out what to do next and how to do it right for our community. If you want to learn more about becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile. It's on all the pages of The Digital Story. Take a look. Hopefully you'll join us. I tell you, this is an important part of our community. These folks are the ones that really make it go in so many different ways, and I hope that you can join us. And finally, a big thank you to our friends at Red River Paper, the longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. They have the site that has everything that you need for inkjet printing. Of course, they have excellent paper, lots of information, tutorials. If you want to know, how do I use Lightroom to make a fine art greeting card, or how do I use Photoshop to make a fine art greeting card, guess what? They can help you. They have an article on that sort of stuff. And then you go, well, what if I want to sell them? What if I want to put them in a local shop or something? Guess what? They have the envelopes and glassine sleeves to make you look as professional as your photography appears. They have everything that you need. They even have ink, for your Canon and Epson printers. If you want to take a look and see what they're up to, all you have to do is click on the tile. It's on every page of The Digital Story. take a look at our landing page and then explore throughout the site. Red River Paper, they are the printer's best friend, and they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some more great stuff for you next week. Until then, be creative, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.